It divides countries into different levels of hierarchy, labels them as democratic or undemocratic.
Asia reacts ahead of democracy summit. It's December 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Myanmar ousted leader sentenced to prison. New Zealand's efforts to stop the spread of COVID-19. Robot frogs. Afghan boxers escape Taliban. And we take you to a light-up wonderland for the holidays. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Concern across Asia this week as the U.S. prepares to host a virtual summit for democracy. It will bring together world leaders, civil society, and the private sector to counter authoritarianism, bolster good governance, and promote respect for human rights. Taiwan is included among the list of invited states, even though the U.S. does not officially recognize it as a sovereign country. Singapore did not receive an invite. VOA's Patsy Wita-Kaswara reports from the White House.
A military takeover in Myanmar, an attack on Brazil's election system by its own president, the assassination of the Haitian president, and several coups on the African continent. These are just some of the democratic declines the world has witnessed in 2021, the backdrop of an upcoming virtual gathering hosted by U.S. President Joe Biden on December 9th and 10th, called the Summit for Democracy.
This is an opportunity for leaders to discuss the challenges and opportunities facing democratic governments and how democracies can deliver for their citizens based on the summit pillars of strengthening democracy, defending against authoritarianism, fighting corruption, and promoting respect for human rights.
The summit is part of Biden's campaign pledge to strengthen democracy around the world and will be attended by 110 countries.
The mobilization and the awareness raising and the focusing of the collective mind on these important democracy issues has already been a very salutary step taken by the administration.
Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are not invited. While the summit is not explicitly about rallying the world against Russia or China, it is an opportunity for Biden to mobilize support against what he sees as their increasing authoritarian influence.
Bringing together democracies is in many ways a strategy that's designed to draw a line between the United States and its allies and Russia and China, and really to try to call on those states to choose a little bit. Not surprisingly, it makes them uncomfortable. States like South Korea, states like Germany, they really do depend on China for their economic prosperity.
Chinese Vice Foreign Minister Liu Yuchong said the summit will hurt global solidarity.
It divides countries into different levels of hierarchy, labels them as democratic or undemocratic, and points fingers at other countries' democratic systems.
During the summit, leaders will be encouraged to announce various commitments to strengthen democracy, but it's unclear whether these will turn into action. Still, the signaling of American democratic values is significant.
It shows a pretty significant break from the Trump administration, so that's important. And I think the kind of subsequent year of action that the Biden administration has announced will be really a really proof of concept.
Some have also questioned whether the U.S. has moral standing to host a summit following the January 6th siege of the Capitol by supporters of Donald Trump seeking to overturn the former president's electoral defeat. The Biden administration says it is precisely the ability to acknowledge imperfections and confront them transparently, a strength unique to democracies, that the summit is meant to showcase. Patsy Wita-Kaswara, VOA News at the White House.
Hong Kong democracy activist Nathan Law says he's been invited by the White House to deliver remarks at the summit. He tweeted out Monday morning that his remarks will serve as a bridge between sessions on protecting human rights and defending against authoritarianism. Meantime, Beijing is criticizing the summit, warning that any efforts to force countries to adopt Western standards of democracy will fail. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream, at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Taliban pledge to probe alleged summary killings of ex-Afghan forces. Age-old feud between allies poses challenge to Biden's Asia policy. China's Evergrande braces for debt deadline. South Korea sets daily records for new coronavirus cases, deaths. Cambodian Prime Minister says Myanmar junta has right to attend ASEAN. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Myanmar's junta has reduced the sentence of ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi on Monday from 4 years to 2. She was charged with incitement against the military and breaching COVID rules. A spokesperson for the group that coordinates opposition to Myanmar's military ruler said that Monday's verdict was an act of treason on the part of the generals. Here's Dr. Sasa of the National Unity Government.
Today we saw the verdict, which is all premeditated, prevedited, and found charges without proof, without evidence, no true, and it's all fabricated lies that they brought and charges against our Saskatchewan State Councillor and our president. So it has nothing to do with the rule of law.
This is the first of a series of possible sentences that could see the Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi imprisoned for decades. Amerlyn Gill is the Amnesty Asia-Pacific Deputy Regional Director for Research.
This is actually another example of the Myanmar's very harsh response to those who oppose it. It shows that the military wants to eliminate any opposition to its rule, including the leadership of the opposition government.
Suu Kyi is 76. She's been detained since the generals staged a coup and ousted her government on February 1st, ending the Southeast Asian country's brief period of democracy. New Zealand will adopt what is being called a traffic light system to curb the spread of COVID-19 and to limit the use of lockdowns. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand's planned traffic light system is expected to end coronavirus lockdowns. It has red, amber, and green categories and gives more freedoms to the fully vaccinated. The biggest city, Auckland, is a red zone, mainly because of its high number of COVID-19 cases. Residents there are allowed into cafes, gyms and hairdressers, but there are limits on capacity and proof of vaccination is mandatory. Much of the country is under the less stringent amber traffic light. The settings will be reviewed in 2 weeks. Michael Baker, a public health and epidemiology professor at the University of Otago in Wellington, says the new system is designed to boost vaccination rates.
There is a band across the central North Island of districts with relatively low vaccine coverage. They're automatically going to the red light classification. This system has two main purposes. One is really to limit transmission of the virus. So it means that if you're indoors, you're indoors with other vaccinated people. But the other thing it does, it's sending a very strong message to the unvaccinated, a very strong nudge, you need to get vaccinated. So I think it will be effective at doing that.
New Zealand's health ministry estimates that about 86% of the eligible population has received two vaccine doses. New Zealand has had some of the world's toughest pandemic controls. The country's international borders are expected to remain closed to most foreign nationals until well into next year. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said the Omicron variant is a reminder of why New Zealand needs to maintain its careful approach to the virus. With 5 million people, the South Pacific country has recorded 12,000 coronavirus cases and 44 deaths since the pandemic began. The traffic light system replaces previous coronavirus alert levels. A recent Delta variant outbreak forced New Zealand's government to abandon its COVID zero strategy in favour of a strategy that prioritises containment. The previous approach was designed to eliminate the virus in New Zealand through border closures and strict lockdowns. Phil Mercer for VOA News. Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, the global recovery and COVID lockdowns. Happening now in Asia, Indonesia's Mount Semeru has erupted again, just as search and rescue teams look for the bodies of the missing. Saturday's first volcanic eruption on the island of Java ejected a mushroom of volcanic ash high into the sky and rained hot mud as thousands of panicked people fled their homes. At least 15 were killed. 27 people are still missing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you're with us here on VOA Asia. At least 38 countries have reported cases of the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus. U.S. President Joe Biden calls the variant a cause for concern, not panic, as scientists work to determine whether it's a more dangerous one than other strains. Precautionary measures threaten the global recovery from the pandemic, with South Africa crying foul at travel restrictions imposed. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Christmas in quarantine. That might sum up the holiday season for would-be arrivals from southern African nations to London's Heathrow Airport. This after reports of room shortages and so-called quarantine hotels, as the United Kingdom now requires mandatory isolation upon arrival from southern Africa due to the Omicron variant of the coronavirus.
This turbulence of the booking and the flight changing and then arranging, finding out where you get your PCR tests and driving, you know, 10 miles to go and book it. It takes its toll. You know, you force people to do something, but allow them to do it.
The UK recently mandated a 14-day quarantine for travelers coming from what it considers red list or high-risk countries, like some in southern Africa. The U.S. has restricted travel from several southern African nations as well.
When those were put in, the only cases we knew about were in southern Africa. And really, those restrictions were put in to prevent new variants from coming to the United States and to protect the American people from new variants.
At a recent news conference in Ivory Coast, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa called travel bans unscientific and said they were a slap in the face to the African scientists who first detected the Omicron variant.
Whilst we respect the right of every country to take measures to protect their people, the sustained global cooperation we need to overcome the pandemic necessitates that we are led by science, and not by emotion, and not by political considerations.
As South Africa battles its fourth wave of COVID-19, largely driven by the Omicron variant, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky justified the agency's cautious approach.
We know it has many mutations, more mutations than prior variants, and many of those mutations have been associated with more transmissible variants, with evasion of some of our therapeutics, and potentially evasion of some of our immunity, and that's what we're watching really carefully.
As of Saturday, at least 16 U.S. states reported cases of the Omicron variant. As scientists continue research on Omicron, health officials brace for the spread of what they've called a highly mutated variant. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Bob Dole, a severely wounded U.S. soldier left for dead on a World War II battlefield and who later became an American political icon, has died. He was 98. Dole led the national fundraising effort for the World War II Memorial in Washington, as well as efforts to pass landmark civil rights legislation to protect Americans with disabilities. China's foreign ministry is responding to reports this week that the Biden administration will diplomatically boycott the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympic Games. The rationale for the boycott is linked to the treatment of Chinese tennis star Peng Shuai after she alleged sexual misconduct against a Chinese government official, plus the repression of Chinese Muslims. Here's spokesman Zhao Lijian.
What the United States should do is correct its attitude, practice the more United Olympics motto of together, take China's concerns seriously, do not politicize sports, and stop hyping the so-called diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympic Games so as not to affect China-U.S. dialogue and cooperation in important fields.
A diplomatic boycott means no U.S. officials would attend any events of the Beijing 2022 Games while still allowing athletes on Team USA to participate. Read and see more on this story and many others at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Embattled Solomon Islands Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare survived a no-confidence vote on Monday after accusing Taiwan's agents of orchestrating recent political violence that plunged the Pacific Island nation into crisis. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. In early 2020, a team of scientists from the University of Vermont, Tufts, and Harvard Universities took stem cells from African clawed frog embryos and turned them into tiny living robots. As if that isn't amazing enough, then something unexpected happened. Maxim Moskalkov has our story.
In March 2020, scientists from three large universities, Tufts, Harvard, and the University of Vermont, created a unique organism in a lab setting, a tiny living robot called Xenobot. But unlike the average mechanical creation, Xenobots were produced from stem cells taken from African clawed frog embryos.
Professor Michael Levine is one of the Xenobot creators.
So what we did was we took skin cells off of an early frog embryo. These are completely normal skin cells. There was no genomic editing, no transgenes, no CRISPR, nothing like that. And we took these cells off of the early frog embryo and we set them aside in a new environment. And we sort of liberated them from the instructions that they normally get from their neighbors in the embryo. And we gave them a chance to do something completely different.
The tiny living robots were programmed to behave in a certain way. They could move around, self-organize, and transport small weights, as well as work together as a group. Levine says that by creating Xenobots, he tried to answer the question of how cells unite in order to create functional structures.
And it turns out that what they like to do is to cooperate together to build something we call a Xenobot. This is very important because if we learn how to communicate with these cells and push them to build the structures that we need, we could resolve many problems in regenerative medicine. So you could ask them to build new organs, to regenerate limbs, to reprogram tumors.
The Xenobots are truly tiny. Their size is no bigger than 1 millimeter. They have no neurons, nor do they have reproductive, digestive, or other systems. They organically break down and fall apart within 2 weeks. Scientists also learned recently that these tiny robots spontaneously reproduce in a new way.
We found that under just the right conditions, Xenobots are capable of a previously unknown 10th way of replicating. And this 10th form of replication is quite different from the 9 naturally occurring forms of replication. It's kinematic or movement-based rather than growth-based, but the result is the same.
The team says they can manage the replication process. Using a special algorithm, scientists created a Xenobot that looks like Pac-Man, the famous video game character. The parent Xenobot, created with the help of artificial intelligence, can use its Pac-Man-like mouth to compress stem cells into a ball and help form them into self-copies. These children then produce their own babies, and this process goes on and on.
Some may find the technology worrisome, but scientists argue there is no need for concern.
This is not a scary technology. This compared to all of the other things that are already happening. So artificial synthetic bacteria, viruses, in fact, natural viruses, as we know, that arise all the time, genetically modified crops, all of these things are already here with us. They're in the environment.
So Xenobots are interesting because if we can get them to do useful behaviors, they would be able to do those useful behaviors, but when they're done doing their job, they would simply biodegrade for the very fact that they're made out of cells instead of plastics and metals.
Ultimately, scientists hope Xenobots can be used in reproductive medicine on a regular basis and give people a better understanding of how multicellular complex organisms arose from ancient single-celled organisms. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia. High school seniors in Vietnam returned to their classrooms in Hanoi Monday. It's the first time in more than 6 months as the capital city eases coronavirus restrictions. Students are attending class every other day in person and the other days online to reduce the risk of infection. The seniors take their national college entrance exam in June. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. They practiced in secrecy and sneaked out of Afghanistan to be able to compete in an international championship. Now the Afghan boxing team are seeking refuge in the West to be able to continue both their careers and lives without danger or fear. The team of 9 boxers, their coach, and a top federation official remained in Serbia after the World Boxing Championship finished in early November. Wahadila Hamidi is the Secretary General of Afghanistan's Boxing Federation.
When the Taliban regime is coming to Afghanistan, everything becomes changed. So it was so difficult to coming for a world championship during the new regime and new government. And as you know better, the situation in Afghanistan is very tough and very bad. And they didn't allow this first days to continuing the boxing and opening the gym. As you know, everyone was afraid to going anywhere for the boxing or for anything else.
The team have since contacted several foreign embassies, inquiring about humanitarian visas and protection. Hasibullah Malikzada is a member of the Afghan boxing team.
So we can't arrive to our future goals. Because of that, we want to leave Afghanistan.
While they have received negative responses by some of the European Union's nation's representatives, they still hope for a positive outcome. Marko Stambuk is an attorney for Belgrade Center for Human Rights.
They are in contact with, as I said, with Belgrade Center for Human Rights. They are aware of their rights and obligations, and now they are thinking of what to do next.
Tens of thousands of Afghans, including athletes, have fled the country since the U.S. and other international troops pulled out in August and the Taliban took over. Millions of lights, a whole Christmas tree forest, and a sparkling holiday field. All of these things and many more can be found on Holiday Road in Leesburg, Virginia. Lisa Bakelets has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Holiday Road in Leesburg, Virginia is a drive into a fairy tale.
You are walking through snow. You are walking through a forest of Christmas trees, and you are down looking at, you know, it's Kwanzaa displays, nativity scenes. I mean, there's just a retro Christmas. And then you see, like, the sea of light on our mansion, and just it's a tunnel that you go through, and it's just spectacular.
Holiday Road is not too long, a little over a kilometer, and ticket prices start at about $30 per person. Visitors find something new to see every few steps.
We have about 25 different scenes as you walk around the trail, with all with their own music and different lights and themes and everything like that. And it's really just a family. It's all religions. It's for everyone. It's for families with young children. It's for date night. It's for just groups of friends who want to come and have a really fun evening.
Then there is a miniature doll-like town. Kristen Hassan and her family are visiting from Dallas, Texas.
It's beautiful. We really love the lights when we walked in and seeing the little houses that look like they're her size, but it's very pretty.
For many Americans, touring holiday lights is a family tradition.
We always go see Christmas lights because my dad put up Christmas lights when I was a kid, and I live far away from home now, and so we always go somewhere, and this was a new thing that popped up this year, and I was like, why don't we try it?
Holiday Road in Leesburg is about an hour drive from Washington, D.C. Preparations begin in the summer, but the lights went up in about 2 weeks.
I think we have about 10 generators on property that are all pumping out power to all the different places around the show.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and they run all the time, like just keeping all the lights on.
Holiday Road will be open to visitors until early January. For Lisa Bakalets in Leesburg, Virginia, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy your day.